All right, at 6:10, it's WGN. It's Your Money Matters. Let's start with the numbers that matter. And the number of Americans applying for unemployment benefits inched up just a little bit. But layoffs still very low during the holiday season. And jobs not all that hard to find right now. That's good news. The U.S. economy expanding at a 4.9% rate in the third quarter. That's a revision. It's down a smidge from the initial estimate, and that number likely continuing to taper off into quarter four. We'll have to wait and see. Leading economic index declined 0.5% in November. That's 20 months in a row of falling economic indicators. I'm going to ask Craig Milanos about that in a moment. Those are the numbers that matter on Your Money Matters on this Thursday, December 21st. Two other quick numbers. The 30-year fixed mortgage rate down to 6.54%. If you've got good credit, et cetera, et cetera, as David Hochberg reminded me this morning. Gas prices down too. Let's get Craig Milanos on the line right now, Wealth Management Group. Craig, those, I mentioned those leading economic indicators, 20 months in a row, flashing yellow lights to recession. I don't want to say they're wrong, but at what point do we go, you know, this is just a messed up time. It's way different than previous times. And maybe those economic indicators flashing yellow shouldn't concern us all too much.
Well, that's why economists never put a time frame on their predictions. The truth, though, John, is everything is so simple. You and I have talked on your program before. We started doing it quite some time ago, and I've said, if it doesn't look like a recession where you live, and it doesn't look like a recession where you work, it's probably what? It's probably not a recession. And the stock market, again, new highs make new highs. The trend is your friend. Don't fight the Fed. I don't know how many more euphemisms I can need. If anyone's still hanging out on Recession Island, man, I feel terrible because you missed out on double-digit gains this year.
Yeah, that is, and that's the thing. And look, they're not going to continue forever. There will be another recession. No one's arguing against that. If anything else, this year and last year has been the silver lining. It has been the, don't time the market, Craig, is what I'm trying to say. And if there was ever a 2-year span where that couldn't be truer, it's these past 2 years. Cause you could have sold at the bottom and be looking at these highs now going, what did I do?
Oh, it's incredible. It's terrible. In fact, you know, something I remind people of is we literally saw in 2023 investors through the end of the third quarter dump $90 billion worth of equity funds, mutual funds and ETFs. Think about that statement, John, going into the fall when it was so miserable, September, October, mortgage rates go up well over 8, the 10-year treasuries at 5, the S&P 500's threatening to go below 4,000. You had some $90 billion with a B come out of stock funds just in time for a rally of biblical proportions. Thank you, Santa Claus, coming into the end of the year.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact numbers on this, Craig, but I was looking at this yesterday because there was some Twitter feed about someone saying the world was finally falling because the markets went down one day after like an 8-week rally. And someone reminded, the original poster that, you know, year over year, the S&P 500 over 9% annualized over the past 30 years. It's beating inflation by about 7%. But if you were just to not be a part of like the 15 biggest rallies in the S&P 500, your gains would be cut in half. And I'm not saying make sure you're in on those days. I'm saying don't time this thing out. Just dollar cost average your way through life.
No, the core of someone's position, if they want to work towards getting retired, the core of someone's money needs to be a diversified portfolio of equities. It is TNT, tested in the trenches. And John, you've said it before on multiple occasions because you've encouraged people, even during the pain last year, that to some degree, these are my words paraphrased through you, is, you know, the price you pay to get long-term investment results is you have to sit through every day of the temporary decline. But just know they're temporary declines. This stock market has never not returned to a point higher than that through which it fell. So that's not an open book to say, everyone, let's just back up the truck and load up on stocks.
No.
It's far more complicated than that, but it is a basic investing truth to say the core of your money needs to stay in. Parts of your money can be traded, but the core of your money, dollar cost average, that's the secret to long-term wealth building.
Yeah, and it's like feels great to say on days like these and months like these and quarters like these, but you and I were talking about that. You were preaching the same thing last year when it was the exact opposite, and you were getting stocks at a discount if you were still doing sticking with your plan. Speaking of plans, you can call Craig to run that retirement stress test for you, 833-WMG-PLAN, 833-WMG-PLAN. And that's going to see how you're spending, your savings, your investing, how all of that impacts your chances at having the money you need for the life you want. We're not done with Craig yet. We'll put him on hold. Craig Bolanos, Wealth Management Group. We're with Craig for, we got a full 11 minutes here, Craig, taking all the way to 6:30. We can really dive into some stuff here. And, Craig, I wanted to talk about this inverse relationship between the 10-year yield and stocks. But before we get too in the weeds, Craig, can you just explain, like, what the 10-year yield is from, like, 30,000 feet? Explain it to me like I'm 10, what that means.
Sure. I mean, from 30,000 feet, as a country, as a nation, we don't pay all of our bills through tax receipts. So the way we as a country, we as a nation, pay the bills that we can't afford to pay from tax receipts is we borrow. The way we borrow is we issue bonds. And the most common bond that we issue in the United States would be the 10-year Treasury yield. So if the 10-year Treasury yield is currently yielding 3.9%, what does that mean? The cost of borrowing for the United States of America is 3.9%. And that 10-year Treasury is so paramount because it influences mortgage rates, home equity lines of credits, credit card APRs, auto loans, etc. The 10-year Treasury is the benchmark that all financial professionals, banks, and insurance companies make their decision on.
And Craig, it's not like set by the government. It's a market, right? Like there are people that go to the 10-year buying auctions and actually buy these, and that's how the number fluctuates, correct?
That's exactly right. The government, the Federal Reserve, who we talk about ad nauseum, they control the federal funds rate. That's a short-term lending rate. That Fed funds rate influences things like the yield on bonds. But the truth, John, is every single week there are auctions. And you've got foreign countries, sovereign nations, pension plans, businesses who are competing to buy or sell these treasury bonds. And it's the free market that establishes the yield. And what's so important for people to understand is on October 19th, I mean, that's only 62 days ago, the 10-year Treasury yield went over 5%. Today, the Treasury yield is just under 4%, and that must have had positive implications for the stock market.
So if I bought a bond in October at 5.whatever%, 1%, whatever it ended up, that means that every year I would gain 5.1% on that bond up until it matured after 10 years. Why does that rate impact equities? What is the relationship between these two things? Because they are very much entirely different things.
Well, let's talk about it the way I would talk about it in a classroom setting, John.
Please.
Stocks are valued, not because of what they make, not because of how cool their company logo or their website is. Stocks are valued based on their profits. We call those profits cash flow. And when someone values a stock, you're looking at all of the company's future projected cash flows discounted to the current risk-free rate, which is a treasury, because a U.S. treasury is a risk-free investment. John, if you bought a 10-year U.S. treasury, I would consider it risk-free, because if you bought it on October 19th, you would have locked in 5% guaranteed for every single 10, for the next 10 years, 5% a year. That's risk-free. So what happens is we have to compare the value of a stock compared to an alternative like the risk-free return in a 10-year treasury. And when treasury bonds are yielding 5, that's a really good risk-free rate. But when treasury bonds are yielding less than 4, it makes stocks and those dividends that much more compelling.
I think you explained it well. I'm just going to kind of hammer this home just to make sure we all understand it, because we do have a little time tonight, and this is important. The idea being that even though these are two completely different markets, the yields, the bonds versus equities and the stock markets, often people have money in both, and they are choosing where, which pot of money to put their money into, right? And if 5% is a guarantee, ooh, that looks attractive. Maybe you're going to sell some of your stocks and you're going, oh, I'd like rather do this a little bit more too. I played a little of this game too myself because we got a big purchase coming up in 2024. So I played that game and money came out of equities. When you sell, the price might go down. And that's where we see that fluctuation. Did that kind of, that sums it up too?
John, I think that summed it up, but we could turn this into strategy too. You know, in the previous segment, we mentioned the fact that some $90 billion with a B left the stock market. But John, when that $90 billion left the stock market this fall at the lows for the year, by the way, it didn't go into the 10-year treasury. Hmm. It went into money markets and high yield savings accounts.
Well, those are
what I want people to think about is even though you could get 4.5-5% in a high-yield money market, the right type of high-yield savings account, those rates aren't going to be here forever because the Federal Reserve tells us that they're going to do what they need to do to lower interest rates into 2024. So now is probably the time, if you're an investor who put money into a high yield savings or a money market, you always got to have your emergency fund, you always got to have your dry powder, but I think it's time to start extending maturities. You've always talked about treasury bills, bonds, notes. People need to start looking at that as alternatives because you can't get comfortable with that cash on the sideline. These yields aren't going to hold.
Right. So even if your savings account number happens to look like a bond rate right now, you can lock one in a bond rate for 10 years or whatever, even longer than that if you'd like, or shorter, versus a savings account where, okay, that looks good for right now, but as things change, that is going to ebb and flow. Okay. So I think we did a good job. You did, Craig, talking about, and Craig's from Wealth Management Group, by the way, the 10-year treasury yield. Let's break down equities a little bit because the one criticism, the one caveat this year that a lot of people have pointed to, maybe not in the last couple of weeks, but generally speaking this year, is that it's a few stocks that have done the heavy lifting. And the average run-of-the-mill stocks or small caps or smaller companies haven't seen as much of a run. What do you make of that?
Well, everybody knows, you're exactly right, that this entire market has been propelled higher by what we've deemed the Magnificent Seven. Some people have a different version. They call it the Great Eight. But the truth is, you look at those seven stocks, the seven stocks that are primarily participating and supporting all things that are AI, 75% of the market's gain is attributed to those seven stocks. And sure, it's got people a little bit nervous because the 1970s, we had the Nifty 50. People were worried about the 50 stocks holding up the market. Then, John, don't forget the late 1990s, we had the Select 20. Oh, there's only 20 stocks holding up the market. John, right now we've got seven stocks. So I think people need to take a look at that, and people need to remember that parabolic moves straight up do not last forever. Air pockets are going to occur, and that's why people should start thinking about going from cap-weighted indices like the S&P to maybe the S&P 500 equal weight. And if you believe the soft landing is real, this rally we've seen in small and mid-cap stocks, that's the S&P 600, the S&P 400, it probably has some staying power, and people ought to make sure some dollars are allocated to that area as well.
When you say go to the S&P 500 equal weight, what do you mean? Are you talking about buying like an ETF that is kind of riding that wave? Are you talking about individual stocks in it, or is there some fund that you can purchase that's an equal-weighted S&P 500 fund? Can you explain that for a moment?
Yeah, I mean, the S&P 500, you know, is a fantastic investment. I mean, for the last 12.8 years, what's been better than the S&P 500? Literally nothing. But we have to understand that the S&P 500, the majority of its performance comes from the largest stocks. So again, those Magnificent Seven, those seven stocks, what those seven stocks do really influences the market. So many people would argue today, if you own the S&P 500, are you really diversified? That's why there's long-standing alternatives. The S&P 500 equal weight is the same 500 stocks, but every company is worth 1/500th of the index. So NVIDIA has the exact same influence daily as would McDonald's or, say, J.P. Morgan Chase or Eli Lilly. That gives people a little bit more diversification, and I just think people should have the core of their portfolio in dirt-cheap, tax-efficient, low-cost passive indices, but you got to pay attention to where the puck might go. Don't fall in love with where the puck has been, or you're not going to win the game.
I think I understand what you're saying, that not only are you hedging against if one of these Magnificent Seven or whatever it is drop down, which undoubtedly there will be some, but maybe that the others are undervalued and there is some upside there. So it's more than a hedge. It could be a worthy investment and you might make more in the long run, but at the very least, you're protecting your back.
Well, that's exactly right because, you know, and in fact, I say this, if you look at the last 6 weeks, the S&P 500 equal weight has been incredibly competitive, doing a bit better than the S&P 500 cap weighted. If you look at the full year, oh no, it's the cap weighted version. So look at those short-term trends, and that's why people should be rebalancing their portfolio. I remind everybody, I don't think this is going to occur, but John, there was a period that we called the lost decade in America. And people are like, the lost decade? What was going on? The lost decade is, remember, from January of 2000 through year-end 2009, do you know how much the S&P 500 made?
Not much, right? Nothing.
Nothing. Yeah. Actually, it was down 9% in total for a 10-year period. But during that same time period, other stocks that weren't the S&P 500 did fantastic. That's right. Why we got to be diversified.
Greg, we went to school today. I really appreciate giving us some extra time and patience with my silly questions. Wealth Management Group is where you can find Greg. You do great work there. 833-WMG-PLAN. 833-WMG-PLAN. He can run a retirement stress test for you to see where the spending, savings, interest, all of that impacts everything. Craig, I appreciate your time tonight. We'll talk soon, okay?
Sounds great, John. Good to be back.